It's been a long journey for Lauren Oliver. Not only is she the co-owner of the literary development company Paper Lantern Lit, she's the master behind several young reader novels and is most well known for the dystopian Delirium trilogy. The final book, Requiem, is out, and readers are finally able to find out what happens to their beloved characters Lena, Alex, Hannah, and Julian as they wage war against that anti-love government. I recently spoke with Lauren Oliver about the trilogy, and she tells us it's a relief to finally get it all down on the pages.
Yeah, I think it is nice. I think it's liberating, although there's a certain element of fear that comes with that as well, because, you know, of course, the truth is that fans expect so much from the conclusion of a series, and they're looking for so much resolution, and so I do think that there's a certain amount of pressure there.
I would think so, especially because aside from doing these three books, you also had two short stories.
Yeah, actually three by the time all was said and done, yeah.
Oh, really? I only read the Annabelle and the Hannah.
There's also a Raven, and actually, I slightly misled you, there's actually in the first editions of the hardcovers, there's actually an Alex short story POV, which was basically I did due to popular demand / threats. People were threatening my life on Twitter unless I did a story from Alex's point of view. So yeah, there was a lot of material in the end.
Well, you have the best or the worst, depending on how you want to look at it, cliffhangers in the first two novels that you're thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to wait for the next book to come out?
Yeah, exactly. I know. I mean, you know, some of my fans seem to think I do it deliberately to torture them. And maybe I do on a subconscious level, but I've kind of always known where I wanted each book within the series to end up and how, you know, the timing of the structure, the overall structure.
So we pick up pretty much where we left off. It's only been a few weeks since Alex has shown up in the last pages
of
the last book. And I mean, Lena has found somebody new, Julian, but I think it's because they really just kind of fell into each other. It's because of circumstances that they were driven together.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that they were driven together by circumstances. And also, I mean, you know, Lena went through an incredibly traumatic event, especially for somebody her age. And she was full of grief. And I mean, the truth is about people, when they experience something like that, it really changes them. And I think that she was looking on some level for a way to heal from that experience.
And on the flip side, we have Hannah as a narrator as well. And
yes,
I really like having that voice because you have Lena, who is just, she's really, her emotions and everything are just all over the place, as they would be when you're running away from people and trying
right.
to stay alive.
Right.
But then you have
right.
Hannah, who's in the society, and she's been cured and going through the motions of what a proper young woman should be doing.
Yeah, and actually, it was kind of interesting. I was about halfway through writing Requiem, and it really felt like something major was missing to me. And then I realized that, you know, I mean, such a huge element of the series is about what it is to be cured and what the cure can bring you in terms of, you know, harmony and safety and kind of peacefulness in your life. And I realized, though, that we'd only ever seen that obliquely from the point of view of people who were resistant to the cure. And I really also felt that we needed to see some of the characters from, you know, from the first book, from Delirium, that we hadn't really seen since Lena left Portland. So for all those reasons, I realized that we were missing Hannah's voice and that she could be the mechanism by which we both saw what it was like to be cured and also learn more about some old friends from the first book.
I like how we get into Hannah's head and how methodical it is, but at the same time, how scared she is that the cure didn't work properly.
Right. Well, especially considering kind of the relationship, the scrutinized relationship in which she finds herself, and she's being held up actually as the model, the paragon. Her life is being held up as kind of the paragon of what the cure is supposed to provide, the perfection and the promise of perfect matching, and the promise of happiness and stability. And so when she feels like there might be something wrong with her and she might be compromising that, I mean, it's really terrifying for her.
And her perfect match is Fred, who is the mayor of Portland's son, who is, he's very
calculating and very motivated and wants to have that perfect facade, as does Hannah's parents.
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't know very much about political families, but my impression of them is often that the image, that the emotion gets sacrificed to the image. And certainly Fred adheres to that kind of a mentality.
And then we have Julian, who is really a fallen star in the sense that he was the poster boy for the cure, that even though it could kill him, he would still do that because his father was head of the anti-love league of everything that was wrong in the world.
Yeah, and he's absolutely subverted what he previously believed in order to escape with Lena and be with her. I mean, I think he represents kind of the failure of ideology, what happens when, you know, the things you believe stop corresponding to the things you're perceiving to be true.
It surprised me how well he adjusted, and especially with Alex back in the picture, but how he really became Lena's rock instead of the other way around.
Yeah, well, I think that I do think about Julian as a character, that there is a kind of inner strength. I mean, I think that there was an inner strength that served him when he was really being obedient to his father's demands and his family's demands. I mean, he's an incredibly disciplined human. He's also kind of used to subverting his own feelings for the good of and for the sake of other people. And in some ways, even though obviously the way that he's doing it now with Lena is quite different, in some ways, there's an element of that here in this book, in the same way that he, you know, suppressed his own feelings and his doubts when he was living with his family and being kind of the puppet and the model of their movement, of his father's movement, Deliria Free America.
That's a really good way to put it. You grow and you love all of these characters as the books go on, and as you said, it's that balance of what you want to do with those characters and finding the right ending for each of them.
Right.
So I'm trying to find the words for Julian. I feel like he became my favorite character out of all of these books.
Oh, good. I love Julian. He's a really good guy. I mean, he was much misled, it's funny, the characteristics that made him so blindly obedient to the movement in book two have also made him a really good character. I mean, he's always an immoral person. I mean, he really is always trying to do what is right, and what is right not just for himself but for other people.
And I think the word misled is very good because I feel like everybody has been misled at some point in terms of what they are trying to achieve and what is really going on.
Absolutely. And I mean, I feel that, you know, part of what Lena confronts in book two, Pandemonium, is that, you know, even her cause, which she has come to subscribe to, believe she's come to subscribe to, absolutely, even the cause of, you know, fighting for something as unilaterally seen as good to her as love. I mean, she realizes that people do things that are really reprehensible even in the name of that cause, and that, you know, people make, you know, people deceive each other and make bad decisions and sacrifice other people for the cause. So, I mean, there's definitely a sense of ideology in general as being something that can lead people to do kind of monstrous things.
And we have people like Raven, who Lena is traveling with, who she is a rock in the sense that she really helps Lena find her inner strength to keep going and realize what the overall mission is for them.
Absolutely. Although she's also a classic example of somebody who, in some sense, goes too far. She uses people for the sake of achieving her ends, as anybody who's in a position of making difficult decisions, political decisions, ends up doing. But she definitely does help Lena face up to the realities of what she has, you know, the movement she has joined and where she is now, the present that she's in now.
And then we have a new character, Coral. And you want to dislike her so much just because she could be that wedge that gets in between Lena and Alex.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you've brought in a new element in the sense of having somebody who has grown up in the wilds and then who has lost everything for this war that is now going on between the government and the scavengers and then all of the invalids.
I felt that it was important to show, as opposed to kind of the traditional love triangle, you know, it's important to show that people find solace and comfort in their feelings for other people. And it's not just Lena who's able to, you know, coolly put her memories of Alex aside. I mean, you know, there is a comfort in being close to people, and Alex finds that too. When he's not able to be close with Lena anymore, he develops a certain kind of closeness with a person who's there and available and knows about loss too. I mean, that's just a very human characteristic, is to seek companionship. And I've also tried to, you know, I didn't want to make her into some kind of, I don't believe in girl-on-girl crime, so I didn't want to make her into some kind of Wicked Witch of the West figure. She's just a girl.
Right, she absolutely is. And I like how it's Raven and the other ones who say, look, we need to do this together. I don't want any of this pettiness going on.
Right. Well, we certainly have bigger concerns to deal with since we're in the middle of a war.
They are, and they were in New York City in Pandemonium, and now they're traveling back north to Maine. So it's interesting how you have, as they are traveling, just giving the reader glimpses of what is happening outside of the two cities that we've been mainly in for the past two books.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that element of it. I really enjoyed exploring some of the fallen cities, and the fallen architecture of the cities. And also, I really enjoyed the time that I got to spend in the camps outside of Waterbury, a community of you know, so-called invalids who have made their own almost tent city. And, you know, the people, Lena and her group believes that it will be some kind of utopian place, because all the people there believe what they believe. And of course, the reality proves far different.
It does. And that's where they are also reunited with Pippa, who is part of the underground of trying to wage the war against the government.
Yes, absolutely. And it's there that they meet several key players in the resistance movement. And that's also where some of the kind of fun, I mean, you know, it's interesting, Delirium, in terms of the larger movement of the series, Delirium was in some ways a very internally focused book. It really focused heavily on Lena's transformation. Pandemonium kind of broadened the lens more, of course, and we got to see elements of the resistance. And then Requiem, in my mind, kind of explodes all that open. I mean, it's a much larger cast of characters. It's more explosive, both literally and figuratively. And we get to see much more about kind of the political machinations and the violence and what's happening throughout the country.
It's funny you say that, because I'm looking at the book right now, and it's not very thick. But when I was going through and making my notes again, I'm looking at it and I said, how is this only in like the first quarter of the book? I thought, you know, you put so much in, but you do it so well that you don't even realize it.
Well, I think that's also the benefit of having it be the third book, because, you know, you really do a lot of work to seed in and establish and get your characters together and kind of establish the basic tensions and the key players in the first book. So by the time you get to the third book in a trilogy, you can really dive in, you know?
Mm, absolutely. So now that this has come to an end, are you going to do some more preteen books, or are you going to start another series for YA?
I am doing several things. I have no series plans right now. Actually, I am working on a middle grade series, so a series for 8 to 12 years old. But I also, my next book is called Panic, and it's a standalone teen novel. And I have my first adult novel coming out next year as well. So I'm kind of doing lots of things, but I'm taking a break from teen series for now. It was a really wonderful experience, and it taught me a lot, but it's grueling. So, you know, I'm definitely not ruling it out for the future, but for now I'm happy doing my standalone novels.
I'll bet carrying all those characters with you for all those years while simultaneously doing other books seems like a lot.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot. It's a lot of kind of grappling with, I mean, it really is like kind of always being in a position where you're going home for Thanksgiving over the holidays. There's both a tremendous feeling of comfort and also aggravation with these familiar characters who never do quite what you want them to do. So,
well, the name of the book is Requiem. It is the final in the Delirium trilogy. Lauren, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Again, the name of Lauren Oliver's book is Requiem, the final novel in the Delirium trilogy. It is published by Harper. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.